Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Matt Scalisi, editor of FilmNerds.com. Ben Stark of Wonder Mill Films. Graham Flanagan of Business Insider.
Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. Well, we both saw the new John Krasinski movie. Master of Suspense, John Krasinski. Yeah. We saw The Quiet Place. And heads up, I think there's a lot of, you know, there's not a huge, this isn't like a big speculation movie, you know, what's the post-credit sequence going to be. But I still want to, like, up front say that we'll probably spoil some pretty good moments in this movie by talking about it at all. So if you haven't seen the movie, you know, go see it for sure. We'd like to pose kind of a central question in all of our discussions. And I guess for this one, it's a question I have for you, Matt. The Quiet Place is the best horror movie since blank, question mark.
Since Get Out? I mean, that's an easy one.
All right, well.
But, I mean, here's what I would say. I actually think...
That was a comedy.
That's true, yeah. I've been told it's a documentary by certain people on Twitter, actually. But
yeah, well.
I think that it is... In the last, let's say 5 years or so, maybe a little longer, there's obviously been a big studio trend towards lower budget horror movies because it's a pretty low risk gamble that has a pretty good return rate overall. But there seems to be like maybe one a year we'll get that's really a cut above the rest, and this one's going to be. This is definitely has a strong lead in the clubhouse for 2018.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe the better central question of the episode is: are we in the middle of a golden age of studio horror movies? Because you have this and Get Out, The Babadook, It Follows a few years ago, which I haven't seen, The Witch. And I mean, when I say studio, I guess I mean like, you know, major studios plus, you know, major indies. A24 and Annapurna and those guys are also making good horror movies. But yeah, I mean, I feel like this
Blumhouse.
Yeah, Blumhouse. There you go. Yeah, of course. Yeah. And they have the deal with Paramount too. And this was a Paramount movie. But yeah, I mean, it just seems like, you know, for original, exciting filmmaking that often also has a bit of a social edge to it, horror is a really fertile place right now. And that's an exciting place. And for this movie, I just think that, I mean, we can get maybe into a little bit of the subject, but I think just from a craft place that this is, I mean, right up there, maybe better than some of those for me in terms of just a setting up stakes, setting up expectations, paying things off, but never losing the central emotional core of the movie. That this is a really great. This is a great horror movie and a great example of what the genre can do.
Yeah, I don't really know, you know, I, as a person who is more of an observer and hasn't really made much of an attempt ever to do this myself, what kind of amazes me seeing these horror movies that do succeed at a pretty decent rate here in the last few years is that it seems like it's some kind of like ideal playground for trying something in a movie theater on a movie screen that hasn't really been done. And I don't know what it is about the horror genre that makes it such a perfect kind of experimental field to say we think about all these like sub genres that have happened and these little trends that have happened in the last few years. And this is one example of it, I would say, would be the found footage thing. And that's kind of stopped being a trend and just become a thing that sometimes you see, and now we all understand it as a device that people use in movies. That really came about because of horror movies. And you know, I think there's more things that, whether specific techniques or just in general, like let's play with some aspect of cinema that we don't normally see played with to this extent. And I think in this movie, it's pretty clear that what they've done is they've really pushed the boundaries of sound design and the use of sound in a movie to create suspense. It's been done in other movies before, but I think this clearly is a movie. I mean, this is not, this feels like a, you know, some horror movies have this tendency to feel almost like you're not just seeing a movie, like you're having some special, unique experience because they're doing something different that you don't see every day at the movies. And this is definitely one of those that, as you're watching it, it's just very clear that this is not a normal movie experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of touched on it earlier. I think there's just a guaranteed, there's guaranteed profit most of the time in horror movies. You know, as long as you keep your budget low, people will go see your movie, and you'll make money because it's at this point one of the most consistently marketable, genres ever. I mean, comedies come and go, you know, and you can't really take risks in comedies. Eventually comedies always get back into this rut of kind of formulaic approaches and structures. But with horror movies, it seems like we get this resurgence like every few years because, like you said, people in this genre keep trying new things and that catches on. I mean, audiences respond to fresh and original ideas. I mean, perish the thought. And this is just a kind of a low risk playground for that. But yeah, I mean, I agree that the experience of watching the film is so different than others because it's in the title, it's so quiet. Like, in the not just the movie, but the theater is quiet. It felt more like I was in church than I was in a movie theater, you know? Like, the theater was probably halfway full when I went to see it on Thursday night, and
my theater was halfway full on Friday morning.
Well, yeah, that's another thing. This movie's going to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
But it was me and a bunch of strangers being very, very quiet and knowing that we all needed to be quiet for this experience to work. And I was like, this is great. Like, this is not, I would not get this at home. A cat would, my kid would sneeze or I would have to go to the bathroom, which I had to go to the bathroom in this movie and I couldn't leave. And so I held it and made it everything more, stressful.
I think you should go into every horror movie having to go to the bathroom a little bit, a little bit.
Yeah.
Just kind of ratchet up the tension, you know?
And you know what? It wasn't that scary if I didn't piss my pants. It just wasn't that scary.
Yeah.
But it was, it's just one of those movies that I feel like it's best experienced on the big screen, trapped, you know, and it's special. It's rare for us to see movies that way, or for us to have to see movies that way. You know, so many of these movies, we can wait till Netflix, or whatever. And, this is not one. I would definitely hope that everybody who sees it goes to see it in the theater. Yeah. And like we said, I mean, this is going to probably make a lot of money. The buzz for this is already so good, and everybody that I talked to at work today, I was like, hey, go see this movie. Just because I know, like, A, it's kind of more accessible, I think, than a lot of horror movies. You know, it's not really super gory or anything. It's definitely violent and scary, but it's not, you know,
It's not Annihilation, I'll say that.
Okay, I haven't seen that, so...
Okay.
Is that violent? Is that what you're saying?
No, that's more like, I don't think this is asking much of the audience from like
no,
a metaphysical standpoint. Yeah.
No, yeah. Yeah, no, I think that this is kind of a crowd pleaser in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It's totally a populist horror movie, which, I mean, to horror snobs, that makes their noses wrinkle, you know, that I love a horror movie, and I love a horror movie when I experience something special with it, but I am a pretty big mainstream horror fan. You know, I'm not going to dig deep into Italian giallo movies to see how disturbed I can get My favorite film of 2016 was 10 Cloverfield Lane, which I think a horror snob would, you know, totally scoff at as being this studio approximation of a horror movie. But that's, I feel like those are more effective. You know, I mean, if you think of Jaws or if you think of, I mean, even at this point, Halloween, these are movies that most people can access and get through, and still come out with a kind of a harrowing experience.
Well, you can do a lot of different things with horror, and I think ultimately we're getting pretty off track from the specific discussion of this movie, but I will say this, you know, I think as I was watching this, I mostly tried to stay involved in it because I was enjoying it so much, but you know, every once in a while I think in a horror movie I will get moments of self-awareness, mostly to give myself a break. And I think what I was thinking a couple of times watching this is, my gosh, like, these guys have absolutely manipulated my emotions in such perfect way. Like, they're nailing this. You know, I am feeling exactly what they want me to feel, clearly. And that's why we see horror movies, I think. It's yeah. Because we want to go be put in that position where somebody else takes the reins for a little while, and we're gonna be safe, but we're gonna get to like tap into stuff that usually is very, very uncomfortable to tap into. And sometimes there are some horror directors that want to take that opportunity you give them and really, really mess with you and take you to an uncomfortable place. And there's some that want to take that and give you more of a, I would say, a thrill ride type experience where you get a payoff. And
yeah,
this definitely in the latter category. And it's a blast. I mean, the other thing that I love about this movie, and I love, there are plenty of R-rated horror movies that I like, but this, I kind of really like that this is a PG-13 horror movie that truly is very intense and scary. And I would have no problem telling any, you know, 13-year-old kid, they would be fine to see this movie. I mean, there's really, it's actually relatively family friendly. It's just that it will absolutely open up your adrenaline full blast into your bloodstream.
Yeah, you'll lift weights more after this. Your bench will go up. That's an interesting, the thing you were saying about what horror movies do. I mean, yeah, it's like a ride you go on that shows you something about yourself, you know, if it's done well. And this movie kept having to confront certain things in this movie, you know, like the baby, you know, this pregnancy being this ticking time bomb of like, you know, they lose a child, which is a tragedy, and then they're going to have another child, which is a bittersweet thing. But it's just this time bomb to this new obligation, this new human they have to protect, that's also going to make an awful lot of noise and
yeah,
keep them from being safe. And it was like this, like, little commentary on unwanted pregnancy, you know, and what do you do if you're in a situation where a baby is it should be a good thing, but it's also, you know, it's a tremendous burden, and it's a big scary thing. So it's one of those things where it's just they take the responsibility of playing with these characters' lives, and they use that to show the character something and then show the audience something as well. You know, they're not just putting these people through the paces and then leaving them for dead. There's something kind of going on, and it builds a connection between the audience and the characters. And I kept finding myself, you know, putting myself in the shoes of every single character in this movie.
Yeah, all four of them are really well drawn, I think, and have an arc, you know?
Yeah, so they each have something that is disconnected from the others in the family. You know, they're all missing this piece. And it's clear that they're all missing something, and they're all looking for something. They're all, you know, longing for something. And, yeah, it gives it gives the, even the little boy, you know, he doesn't want to be a protector. He's scared of being a protector. And at the end, he is the one protecting the baby. And it's just like, obviously the clear kind of main dichotomy of the movie seems to be between the daughter and the father, and the strain there. But there's so much going on. I, to a friend at work today, I mentioned it was kind of like a Bergman horror movie. You know, it's this like quiet, austere country family drama that happens to have giant ear monsters in it.
Bergman is an interesting comparison. I think that you're seeing the most right now as a comparison in, you know, reviews is to M. Night Shyamalan movies, which I don't think is, I think it's easy to understand that comparison. And I really like M. Night Shyamalan movies a lot, so I don't mean this as a negative, but I actually think that one issue that his movies sometimes have is there's a lot of deus ex machina happening, okay? And there's usually a relatively good explanation for it, but a lot of his movies, the breadcrumbs that are left that ultimately pay off and get resolved requires a pretty big leap in for the audience in terms of like believing what's happening and why it's happening. And a lot of it comes down to either extraordinary luck or divine intervention or that kind of thing. And
right.
I actually thought this movie was much tidier about those things. There are definitely similarities in that you don't see anything in the first, you know, in the first 70 minutes of this movie that's there for no reason. It all pays off. It's all going to get used. But I do think it all happens a lot more naturally in this movie than I think probably the best comparison you could make from a Shyamalan movie to this is Signs.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's probably the biggest criticism of that movie is those payoffs are a little forced. They happen a little too fast and unnaturally. And this movie, they really play out. They're very well thought through, and I think they play out very naturally. And I think also the stakes in this movie somehow feel higher than they typically do in a Shyamalan movie, which is hard. We're still talking about a bunch of horror movies where people are at risk to die, but I think the way that we're sold so hard on the conditions that this family is living in makes the stakes feel so high because we have to live with them in this oppressive fear for the entire movie. I mean, that's really, I think, what separates this movie from most other movies in the genre is it's not necessarily, I mean, the sound is obviously a big deal, but I think what that does is, you know, the pervasive thing that this movie is about is a world. I mean, the premise of the movie basically is if you lived in a world where you are so completely surrounded by this fear and tension at all times that it's literally you have to change everything about your entire life.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of ways you can take that thematically, but I think that's really what the movie is talking about more than anything is this, you know, this feeling that you can never relax and you always have to be on guard and everything could kill you all the time. and that the sound, I think, accentuates that somehow. It really is the fact that from the first frame of the movie, we're surrounded by this, like, all these weird rules that they've had to create for themselves. There's no break from it. From start to finish in the movie, there's no, really, we don't get a release from the fear until literally the last shot of the movie. That's the first time we see someone who's not fearful.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. And it's awesome. There's the scene where the break in the movie is after the baby is born and John Krasinski and Emily Blunt can have a conversation. That's like the break.
Yeah.
And then, but the other kids are still out there, you know? And so it's like, you can't really let your guard down, even though you really desperately want to, because you've just been cranked up this entire time. Yeah, I mean, the Signs comparison that you mentioned earlier is exactly what I was thinking. And even to the point where one of the things I said to my wife afterwards, I was like, this is kind of like Signs in that the thing that ends up defeating the aliens is something that's pretty commonly occurring. Like in Signs, it's water, obviously.
Right.
But
somebody would have found it before now.
Feedback. It's feedback. And she mentioned that, well, no, the AIDS would provide a specific type of frequency and all this other stuff. So it's like, okay, it's a little bit harder to come by, but it's still, that was definitely, I wouldn't be surprised if the screenwriters were somewhat inspired by Signs, which for me isn't a problem because I think that's a fantastic movie. And I'm willing to go with that. And because of the, just that ending, man, like going back to that, it's just so awesome that we don't have to see the battle, that, you know, that we don't have to see, you know, the aliens being overtaken by the government that with its giant speakers of and giant ear hearing aids that they make.
Yeah.
Blast
we don't
out
want
from.
A, you don't want a Mars Attacks ending to this movie. Yeah.
Right. Right. Exactly. Where there's like, they're like setting up giant speakers on the Great Wall of China and like projecting them at fields of these aliens that are running at them or whatever they are. Just the fact that you could end this with this character, like you said, that has been like literally just put through the ringer this entire time, has lived in fear, has lost so much, has lost a child, has lost her husband. And you can end this movie of on a shot of her smiling and cocking a shotgun. It's just like, it's like, that's movies. That's like cinema, you know? It's like, I don't need to see anything else. I just need to see a changed human face and know that, okay, this is the end. And that's, I think that shot really is where the movie got me, you know?
I definitely
I was like,
was
okay,
in.
This is awesome.
Yeah, I was in before the ending, but it's so funny how much of a difference a perfectly duck landing, you know, the perfect
it's
final
everything. Yeah.
The way you cut to black in a movie can such a massive, you know, it's like who could know for sure, but like it really could be like a full, if we're grading this thing on out of 5 stars, it could be a full star difference how they end the movie, you know?
Absolutely.
And, great screenwriters and filmmakers. There are some that aren't that good at ending a movie, and there are some people who just really have it. And you know, credit to John Krasinski. I never would have thought that John Krasinski was the guy who was going to make a movie that would be this effective for me, but he really did. And he's good. He's good in the movie too. It's a good performance. And Emily Blunt obviously is also very, very good. That's less surprising to me because I've seen her in other stuff where I thought she was really effective. But you know, I think John Krasinski is the real surprise to me here. He just really did a great job with every part of his job in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, there's a part of me that's like that is like, okay, he's like perfect in some ways, you know, he's like this, but I feel like you see that on his, you see like the weariness of having to be so put together, and having to have built this whole complex, you know? That's one thing I love about the movie is that you just get dropped into this environment that they've had to build for themselves just to survive. And he wears that on his face and in his performance is like this guy that's had to be, you know, just on his toes. To just for basic survival to protect his family. I was also surprised. I think this is the first time I've really even like picked up on him as an actor. I haven't seen very many movies he's in. I've never seen The Office.
Have you not really?
No. I saw the first episode of The Office and tapped out.
I have to say that's probably. I mean, I may be even more surprised than you because of how I've seen, how much of him I've seen. I mean, because
sure.
The Office is a show where he's definitely asked to be the cool guy and charismatic at all times, and very, very different than what he does in this movie. But I also want to ask you, Ben, about something that to me I picked up on, and I could be seeing it on my own, I could be reading into it, but I think it's interesting that this is a movie, and you know, as you mentioned, there's usually something to say about the world going on outside of these horror movies that hit so well with audiences. But this is a movie about, again, as we said, an atmosphere of fear everywhere. And I think there's certainly a lot of people who feel that way right now in our country. This movie's opening sequence, the pre-credits opening sequence, to me, felt very much like it has something to say about guns. And there's not a gun in the opening sequence of the movie, and there is one at the end of the movie. But you know, I don't know if I'm reaching too much here, but when you see basically all the older family members very concerned, very jumpy about the youngest member of the family finding some device, and they take out the thing that makes it dangerous, and they think they've done what they need to do, and the little kid can just very so easily pop those things back in it and make it dangerous again, and ultimately gets it killed. And that becomes a thing for the rest of the movie that's kind of in the background for every character. Everybody feels responsible for it. Everybody feels like they did something wrong, and you know, his response really is, you know, it wasn't anybody's fault. It just happened. And they kind of have to all get past that and get over it. I don't know if that carries through in a consistent way through the whole movie, but to me that was really what it made me think about.
No, I mean, absolutely, the score on the moment where the kid finds the shuttle and then kind of brings it to the family, there's this score beat that hits, and it's kind of like this pushing tracking shot behind the kid, and it's filmed in such a way that I actually thought, like, oh, he must have found a gun in this store. And then you see it's a toy that he's been looking at. And so, yeah, I think they definitely shoot that with the tension of, like, you know, giving, like, there's so many dangerous things that this kid could have in this world, and these parents are doing their best to keep it, you know, keep it from affecting them in a negative way. So yeah, I do think there's some, and there is something about you know, involving kids with this whole process too, you know, of fielding. I mean, if I said the Krasinski character doesn't really have a flaw, but I mean, he refuses to allow his oldest child to come learn how to fish with him, you know? And there is something there where it's like, he's the boss, and he's got to figure out how to fix this and how to protect everybody. So I do think there's also something going on with the dialogue between generations and between kids and parents. And at the end of the movie, they all have to kind of collaborate to come up with a solution.
I think you're right, and that is kind of, if the theme carries through anything, it's that the approach of the family towards this world where they have to be afraid of everything all the time is, let's just hide from it and let's try to protect ourselves and be quiet. And ultimately the resolution to it comes, we don't need to be quiet, we need to confront it. And it might be a little bit ham-fisted with the analogy, but ultimately it's, you know, it's making noise and you know, being, you know, sort of approaching it in a direct way is actually what destroys the problem.
And it's looking at the weakness. You know, it's looking at the weakest character's weakest trait. You know, it's a girl who is hearing impaired, and it's her, the fact that she's hearing impaired is the key, you know, and it's looking at the most marginalized members of a community and saying, how can you help? You know, how can we empower you to help, you know, this thing that we all want to fix? So I think, yeah, I think there's a lot. And, you know, at the end of the day, what it teaches us is guns are fine if you give them to a good mother.
Yeah.
It's a good reason to use them.
No, it's definitely not an anti-gun movie. No, I think it's more about dealing with a world where there's a lot to be afraid of, and
it's about responsibility, I think, and spreading responsibility, and how we react to threats. I definitely think there's a lot there, and definitely a lot more to talk about. But for now, I mean, I think it's just a pretty awesome horror movie that I didn't even realize it was PG-13. So, I mean, it's super accessible, and I think everybody should go see it.
Yeah,
and I think everybody will.
I think the most graphic violence we see in the movie doesn't even involve a human.
It's a raccoon.
Yeah.
Spoilers for Infinity War.
It's all connected.
Uh-huh.
The Quiet Place, the latest movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
That's right.
I definitely think that I'm curious what this will do, Ben, because we always come out of, like, movies that get a lot of buzz by saying, how is this going to affect other things? And maybe it won't, but, you know, I wonder what this movie does, whether it's for John Krasinski's career. You know, look, Emily Blunt's already a huge deal. So, but I think hopefully what it does, if anything, it just kind of keeps the ball rolling on these production companies that are rolling out and choosing really, really excellent horror scripts and getting them produced. Because it's a great streak we're on, and I hope people keep taking chances like this and doing interesting things.
Yeah, it's a simple original premise carried out with perfect execution. And that's, I mean, I guess that is a lot to ask. I was going to say, is that so much to ask? Yeah, it actually is. But I think it's worth appreciating when it comes along. But on that note, you know, this is going to get like 40 bad sequels where the monsters come back, and then it'll be like the grown up version of the sun and
a quieter place.
It'll be a lot, you know. The sequels will not be as quiet, I predict. I'm thinking of Chronicles of Riddick kind of franchise.
You're just gonna have to hear high pitched squealing and shotgun fire for the entire movie.
Yes, that's what the next trailer will be.
Yep.
Hey, this is Graham Flanagan for Film Nerds Unlimited. I'm in New York, New York on a Saturday in April. It's really cold here. Here to talk about A Quiet Place, which I saw last night with my wife at the Village East Cinemas in New York. And I loved the film. I had a blast. We saw it in a packed theater on the Friday night that it came out. And I tell you, like, I love seeing a fun, scary movie on the night it comes out, the Friday night it comes out, full of people in the theater. It's just the most fun feeling, and that's what we had last night. And so I would recommend getting in there soon to see it with a crowd, because movies like this, I think, work best with a crowd. So to the movie itself, I loved it. I had a blast with it. I love the world they set up. I enjoyed all the characters. It had heart. Not a lot of humor to go around, that's for sure. And it was suspenseful and scary and made you think. And I thought that the story was so well laid out, and with all these little hints of things to come, a lot of foreshadowing that really worked and helped to build the suspense. So visually, it looked great. Performances were great. So I think it's confirmed John Krasinski is a really, really good director. And, you know, and I cannot wait to see what he does next. So I loved this movie. I really did. I had a blast with it. You know, of course, when movies answer the question, what is out there trying to get us, and it's just a big creature, sometimes that can be disappointing. But in this case, I thought that the creatures were scary. You know, and this is a B movie. It's about creatures, and it's handled in a different way than most B movies, where things are slowed down, and there's a substance to it in terms of a family dynamic. But in a sense, it is a movie about trying to not get killed by creatures, and the way that they work the creature's weakness into the story earned that. You know, it wasn't just random creatures. It was creatures with this heightened sense of hearing, and it all played out beautifully. So I thought that it earned that, just having the creatures there. So I'm a fan of this film. And now the question is, after it's made so much money, or it's going to make so much money this weekend, is where do they go from here? Do they make sequels? Do they make prequels? Do they make a series? Lots of different ways to go. And, you know, if they left it alone and just left it as is, that would be fine too. But let's fantasy book this a little bit. For me, the most appealing answer is to do a prequel with the same cast, go back a few years, and show the family right before the creatures strike, and let's just see that all break down. And I thought that this was beautifully handled in the movie with the scene where you're in John Krasinski, his little workshop communication station, and you see all the headlines that tell you kind of what happened, that this was sort of this catastrophic event where, you know, it started to happen and there was media coverage of it, and you started to kind of get clues where that people began to understand how it worked, and you know, so I really enjoyed that. It was really a great way to tell that side of the story without having to have a lot of expository dialogue, and he did it visually. But I would love to go back and see, you know, that, how this happened, how this family reacted, and what they did to be safe and get to where they were on their secluded farm. Where were they before? How did they sort of, you know, how did their kids handle it? You know, I think that the story, the way that the story started, it was just tragic and you know, a really great way to set the story in motion. But that's how I would do it. Now, it's like, after the movie's over, we know, you know, it's just going to be Emily Blunt and the kids. And, you know, they kind of have the answer to how to fight the monsters now. So it's like, it's kind of a foregone conclusion. Like, yep, they're going to figure out a way to kill them all on a mass scale by making these high frequency noises. I don't really want to see that story as much. Then also, Ben or Matt just suggested that we could see a parallel story to this family, a different family dealing with the same thing. I don't know. I don't see, if you have a really great idea as to how you can tell the story, another story that's as good, if not better, than this one, I just think this was an awesome story. I don't really want to see a spinoff about the old couple that meets their doom. I don't really want to see that. I would want to see an origin story of how we got to this place that ends with the family, you know, heading to that drugstore, because we know where it goes from there. But again, at the end of the day, probably the best thing to do, just leave it as it is, and hopefully John Krasinski can move on to another original fun story to do, because obviously he's got skills. I love this movie. I don't know what Ben and Matt really thought about it. I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say. But man, go see this in a crowded theater as soon as possible. Thank you, Michael Bay, for making it all happen. For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.